Welcome back to another episode of Inside Rock. On this episode, we're going to be talking about memorable moments from the 70s, part two.
Right, like in part one, we talked about 1970, 1974. Mm-hmm. This time is 75 to 79, but I think we overlooked a few things in our first episode, right?
It's not that we overlooked, it's that we didn't give them enough credit. There's some artists that we just kind of skipped over that were really top of their game.
Yeah, I mean, the 70s jam-packed full. I mean, we're going to try to at least touch on everybody, but you know, you wanted to focus on bringing somebody forward that we kind of...
Yeah, David Bowie, man.
David Bowie, yeah, absolutely.
David Bowie. I mean, Ziggy Stardust. I mean, that album alone is probably one of my favorite albums from the 70s.
And The Spiders from Mars.
Yeah, that's right, Ziggy Stardust, yeah. So, I mean, he nailed that character, but he eventually refused to play the character after about, what, 1974, I think it was?
Yeah, I mean, he was big in the UK with that character. He still didn't really hit the top in the US yet, and that came later.
Wow, great album. Great album, and Bowie absolutely nailed that. So, so we want to give kudos to Bowie. I mean, we skipped over that and when we were in 1972, right?
Yeah.
So
I mean, it sounds like Suffragette City changes.
It's funny you say Suffragette City.
Yeah.
Suffragette City was not the biggest song on that album at the time. Like it was really just a B-side to a record. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it wasn't even released as a single. It was a B-side.
Well, in university, we would all be riding in the car, the song would be coming on, and we'd all wait for that one line.
Wham, bam, thank you,
absolutely. Yeah. Everybody would yell it out. It just became, you know,
it was a
tradition.
Great, don't get me wrong. I love Suffragette City, but... Yeah, I don't think he even thought it was going to be as big as it was eventually. Yeah, great tune.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was part of that whole thing you called glam rock in previous episodes.
Quit saying I called it glam rock.
Yeah, you called it glam rock.
Glam rock is a thing, man, and it was...
Well, you brought it up. You brought it up.
I'm looking at Cha right now.
Cha's thinking how to help
with glam. Yeah, you guys having fun? You know what? Can I say something?
Yeah, jump in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't like Bowie.
Whoa! Oh, you don't like Bowie?
Nah.
Okay. He doesn't like the Beatles, and he doesn't like Bowie.
Well, explains a lot about him, doesn't it?
Calm down.
Man, come on.
I can appreciate some Beatles tunes. I can.
Appreciate.
I can appreciate, of course. I can.
To the most successful songwriters in music history, Lennon and McCartney, and you can appreciate some of it.
Whatever.
Whatever, Russ.
Whatever, Russ. Oh, man. I can't believe. Good thing, I don't know. You're my brother. I'd have to disown you. Okay, so that brings us to 1975 when Bowie's Young Americans album became very popular in the United States. Yeah, did you know that the song Fame on that, he wrote with John Lennon?
I did know that.
Well, there you go.
I did know that, but
I didn't know that.
Thanks, though, for bringing that back up again.
Yeah, so that song and that album were Bowie's first like massive hits in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, 75 was a good year. Do you want to get off of Bowie for a minute?
Yeah, we've done enough of Bowie.
Yeah, enough of Bowie.
I mean, shut up, Chuck. Anti-Bowie guy. Zeppelin, the year before, 1974, launched their new label, Swan Song Records. Remember?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we talked about that.
We did.
And in 1975, they came out with a double album, Physical Graffiti. That was a huge album on that label. And great. I mean, whenever an album comes out as a double, when a band releases a double album, it always blows my mind. Like, that's a lot of material. A lot of bands struggle to release an album and get an album put together, and they do a double, and it was huge. It was a great album.
Actually, Bad Company used that.
They did.
Yeah,
they did. Swan Song Records. Yeah, absolutely.
You know who else was huge in 1975? Bruce.
Of course. Born to Run, man.
Bruce Springsteen. He was on the cover of Time and Newsweek
at
the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was huge.
Great album. You know what my favorite Bruce album is? It'll come up later in the 70s. Maybe we should wait. Yeah, we'll get to it.
Born to Run.
No, that was not. It's a great album. Don't get me wrong. It's a great album. But that's not my favorite album.
Thunder Road.
Thunder off of Born to Run. Yeah. But no. We'll get to it. I'll mention it later.
All right. Well, I mean, we were going to do a podcast dedicated to this next thing I'm going to say, but in the 70s, this came out of nowhere.
Disco.
That's right.
Disco, baby.
Disco
is great.
Just went. Wait a minute. You love disco, but you don't like the Beatles. You don't like Bowie.
God, you're taking it to extremes. I said there's a lot of good Beatles tunes. Yeah. Did I ever own a Beatle album in my life? No.
How many disco albums? Did you wear like the white suit and go to the discos and do like the pointing in the air with the toe tapping and all that stuff? Did you do that?
That's rhetorical, right? No.
Yes.
No.
Yes, it is. As far as I'm concerned.
No, I did not do that.
As far as I'm concerned, it's rhetorical.
Right. Yeah. Well, anyway,
actually, to this day, one of my playlists I listen to quite often is the disco playlist.
Okay, so give me some songs you like.
Well, why was he giving us a hard time before about disco?
No, I wasn't.
You're the one that
no,
has his
don't say you were.
Notion.
Oh,
I don't have a problem with disco. I don't
really.
Yeah, it's great. Okay, good. I don't know this guy.
Okay, so yeah, I know he's an amazement. He's an enigma.
Yeah.
So what are some of the songs you like?
Put me on the spot.
Well, come on.
About disco?
Yeah. I mean, the Bee Gees were huge because of Saturday Night Fever.
We're jumping ahead, but that's coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, the other ones, like I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor, and
Funky Town.
La Freak by Chic.
Funky right? Town. That's Lips. Was it Lips?
Lips, Inc.
Lips, Inc. Yeah.
And then Donna Summer, Love to Love You, Baby.
Yeah.
You mean? And all the disco stuff had, like, sexual undertones.
More like overtones.
Well, yeah, I guess it was pretty overt.
I think wasn't it Donna Summers? They banned it in certain markets.
Well, because she was simulating orgasms during the song.
And doing it quite well, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
I got the 12-inch single.
That's what she said.
12-inch single.
That's what she said. Just anyway.
I don't know about you guys. I'm getting kind of turned on here. Talking about disco.
Well, Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Awesome.
That's the way I like it.
Yes.
I'm just saying. That's the name of the song.
Is this getting awkward? I just bought the KC vinyl. KC's greatest hits. Casey and the Sunshine Band. I just grabbed it. Yeah. It's good stuff.
How about... No, I'm not even going to mention that one.
Well, you got it now.
Spank by Jimmy Bohorn.
What's going on?
Bark Like a Dog for Me by who?
Donna Summer had a bunch of them, you know. Bad Girls, Hot Stuff. I mean, she was
MacArthur Park.
Anyway, there's a ton of disco songs throughout the 70s, and it was a whole movement. I mean, discos were the places to be, and people were going out to discos.
It was the best.
Yeah,
it really was.
You had to wear the
platform shoes.
I still remember that picture of you. I think we mentioned this before.
I was at work.
You were at work. You had the picture this. You had the straight long hair covering half of his face. Uh-huh. You had the dark navy blue long sleeve shirt with the white bow tie and plaid, like red and blue and white plaid pants and platform shoes.
Yes, yeah, so what's the problem? Buddy, what are you talking about? He wore that like 2 weeks ago.
You know what? And who was it that made copies of that picture when I got married? And put it on everybody's table.
I think that might have been me.
I think it probably was you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was horrendous.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, you strutted around like you were hot stuff, man.
I was, baby.
I know. Okay.
Looking for some hot stuff.
All right. So, yeah, the disco. Disco was all the rage.
We
in
could
the
do
70s.
A whole. Listen, we should dedicate a show to disco.
Hey, by the way, you know what? I distinctly remember back then. During the disco era,
you didn't like disco, and I did.
Oh, whatever, man!
You're full of crap. You never did like disco back then. You didn't.
Okay,
you didn't.
You know what? What we're going to agree to disagree. However, I was a rock and roll guy. It's possible. I'm not going to say you're absolutely wrong. I love disco. I got a ton of disco records.
Because you
learned
to appreciate
it. It's just fun music to listen to.
You learn to appreciate
now, at
it,
the
like
time,
I appreciate the Beatles.
Yeah, yeah, good point there, Chuck.
My mind could maybe playing tricks on me. Maybe Chaz, right? Because he does remember. No, you remember a lot about my habits with listening to music and whatnot. So I'm not going to say you're wrong. But let's just say that I've come to love disco.
There we go.
Yeah.
We'll end it there.
I'll go with that. Yeah. But I was a rock and roll guy. Foghat, Stones.
Too.
That's always me. But anyway.
Yeah, and I should remind everybody to check out our show notes for this episode. Go in there, you can find a link to a Spotify playlist that'll have a bunch of the songs that we mentioned here on this podcast. Okay, so before we leave 75, we got to mention another band.
Well, we have to.
Well, there's a whole bunch of them, but they throw out the last part of the 70s, but Fleetwood Mac.
Well, Fleetwood Mac, that was the first...
I'm not a big fan.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
You know what I love about... I love that you brought that up, because my favorite album is Fleetwood Mac. It's their 10th studio album, just the self-titled, with the new lineup, with Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks joining the band.
Mm.
And that's when Bob Welch left, right? To go solo. But... everybody remembers Rumors from 77 as being, you know, the best Fleetwood Mac album.
Oh, that's the one I remember, Rumors.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's one of the best-selling albums of all time. Mm-hmm. But that self-titled one from 75 is still my favorite. I love that album.
Do you have it on vinyl?
Absolutely, I do. Huh. Yeah, absolutely, I do.
Hey, have you ever seen... Well, of course you have. You have. But yeah. Have you ever seen videos of Fleetwood Mac, like... playing music, whether it be in a concert or music video, whatever. Have you ever seen the drummer?
Mick.
Mick. Have you seen him?
Mick Fleetwood?
He's
awesome.
He's got the wildest drumming face I've ever seen.
He does.
Looks like he's having a stroke.
He's one of my favorite, but he's one of my favorite drummers. I mean, John Bonham, obviously, is probably my favorite, but...
You better bring up somebody else.
But Neil Peart, I know. All right. I know. We already talked about Peart. We know he's a legend, right? Okay.
Well, hey, by the way, the Giz has already sent me a message saying when we do Rush, he wants in on that one.
Yeah, Giz.
Well, we could dedicate a show to Rush. No kidding.
So we'll have to include the Giz back in that one when we talk about Rush.
All right, Giz. If you're listening, pal, get ready, because we'll be doing one.
But yeah, so there you go.
We're not jumping off of 75 until we talk about Nazareth. Nazareth, that's my favorite. I've always said that's my favorite album.
Hair of the Dog?
Of all time. Oh, yeah. Hair of the Dog is my favorite album.
It is a great album.
Yeah, that came out in 75. We don't have to harp a lot on it, but I just got to give them a call out because I love that album. They were going to name, you know what they wanted to name that? The Hair of the Dog, the title track? Do you know what the album was supposed to be called?
Tell me.
Son of a Bitch.
Oh, yeah. Well, they say that how many times?
They do. Yeah. But that's what they wanted to name the album, and the label wouldn't let them. They said, no, you can't do that. Yeah,
They would now.
They would. Are you kidding? For sure. That's tame now.
Yeah, I know. It's true.
But that's what it was supposed to be called. And you know, there's a song on there. It's called Guilty. It's a slower song, and it's written by none other than Randy Newman. Wrote that song.
Randy Newman?
Randy Newman.
Short people?
Short people. You got it, buddy. So, yeah, he wrote that song, and it's fantastic. It's a fantastic song.
But, okay. Do you know what the Hair of the Dog is short for? Like, why, where it came from?
Where?
Hair of the Dog that bit you.
Is a drink.
It's a drink. Yeah, an expression in English language, I guess, used to refer to alcohol that is consumed with the aim of lessening the effects of a hangover.
Of course.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Really? Welcome to the podcast, Cha.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Wow. You learned something tonight. That's awesome.
So when you got a hangover, well, you could have used that last week.
Was that the screech night? Or
No. That was just the half and half night.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the hair of the dog that bit you. Here, have another shot.
There we go. Okay. Very good. Yeah.
All right. So are we going to go on to 76 now?
Well, Toys in the Attic came out in 75. You can't jump over that. Come on, man. Well, let's just do some cool quick call.
Okay, go ahead.
That was my first album, by the way, I ever bought in my life.
Toys in the Attic?
Yes. First album. So proud of it. And I never had to worry about buying albums because you always did. I was always sponging off yours, right? Playing your albums.
Just don't put any fingers on them.
Oh, I knew.
Grab them by the edges.
I know. I knew that. But yeah, that was my first album. So go ahead. Continue.
Nice. Another call out, 1975, One of These Nights by the Eagles.
Oh, well, we're going to talk about the Eagles in 76, but yeah.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Well, that just to mention, and one of the greatest live albums I had in my collection, this is prior to Frampton Comes Alive, Kiss Alive, the live album.
Oh, the Alive album,
1975, yeah.
Well, if you're going to mention Kiss, I have to mention 1975 and Night at the Opera, Queen.
Well, that's on there too.
Yeah, I mean that came out and said that was huge.
Yeah, it was,
buddy.
It was.
That Kiss live album that got played.
Oh my God.
Seriously, like a lot.
Oh yeah, at the did. House. Yeah. It did. Yeah. I had the booklet. I took the staples out and I opened up the posters and put them on my wall.
I remember.
I mean, it was great. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff.
Okay, so going into 1976, let's continue on. We'll talk about the Eagles. We mentioned them before.
Well,
but
since you said it was your favorite band.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the Best of the Eagles album.
Volume 1.
Yeah, released February of 76. And what record does that hold?
The best selling album of all time.
Yeah.
So it overtook Thriller. Thriller was the biggest selling album. And now it's the Eagles.
Dark Side of the Moon. It took over too, because Dark Side of the Moon was huge.
Yeah, no, it's not best selling of all time though. Yeah, but it's definitely good. We could talk about Dark Side of the Moon too.
I know.
Wow. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so I have a little bit of an issue with that record, only because it's a compilation album. It's a studio album, but it's a compilation album.
Yeah, it is.
Right? Yeah, I'm just saying, you know?
What do you mean? Because you mean it's like it's like a money grab? What do you mean?
Well, it's the best songs from all their previous albums.
That's right. It's all these hits on one album. Well, of course, people are going to flock to it, right? Because it's the greatest hits album. It's not a standalone studio album.
Well, a bunch of other people did greatest hits albums and didn't do as well as that one.
I know. We're talking about the fucking Eagles, though.
I know, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, they were awesome.
Yeah. Where'd they get their start? I think we talked about this before.
Where they get their start?
Yeah.
Have you seen pictures of them when they first started?
Yeah.
Bunch of shaggy old hobos.
Yeah, they were. Do you remember?
I don't remember where they got their start.
They were the studio band for Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know the best thing to come from the Eagles? Joe Walsh.
Oh, Joe Walsh.
God, I love Joe Walsh.
And he didn't join them till later.
He joined him in the 70s. Yeah.
70s, yeah.
Yeah, he joined them later.
Yeah.
I love Joe Walsh tunes. Seriously, it's great. I'm sorry, getting off the Eagles.
We'll finish with the Eagles, but I mean, 76 was a huge year for them. They released that album in February.
Yeah.
And then they had one of their biggest hits ever.
Well, biggest albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not bigger than the greatest hits, obviously.
No.
But, yeah, Hotel California.
In December of that same year.
December of the same year, too, yeah.
I mean, the intro to Hotel California is just classic.
You know, they had a big falling out with, you know, Don Felder, right?
He was one of the main writers of
that. Because, yeah, he did the double neck 12 string. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad, right? Because he was he's the one that gave them their electric sound. He changed their whole sound with that album.
Yep.
Life in the Fast Lane. And, you know, it's just.
He's very talented, but him and Glenn Frey just did not get along.
Yeah, I know. Hey, we had our picture taken with Don Felder.
Yeah, we saw him at the casino.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Eagles. I love listening to the Eagles. They've got a lot of playable songs too. If you play the guitar, the acoustic guitar, you can play a lot of their songs, and they're just fun.
Remember, I talked to you the other night. I called you, and you're on your guitar. You played a couple of opening chords, and I went, "Hey, Tequila Sunrise."
Tequila Sunrise. Yeah,
right
I was
away,
playing
I
that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you did a good job at that.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
And I love playing the Eagles. It's good stuff.
Good stuff for sure.
All right, so 76. What else we have 76 there, Queeks?
Boss Gags, Silk Degrees.
Yeah, and where did he get his start?
He started with the Steve Miller Band.
Yeah, that's exactly
who
right.
Who did?
Boss Gags.
Boss Gags.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Lowdown.
Yeah. And Boss Gags used session musicians in 76 for his Silk Degrees, who later on went on to form their own band called Toto. Isn't that funny?
Wow. Really?
Yeah, isn't it funny? You know, the 6 degrees of separation in music is amazing. Yeah,
not like, even.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah. Now, we were out album hunting the other day.
Yeah, you went crazy.
That was awesome. I just started buying it. I loved it.
I know.
But you picked up a double album that you've been wanting for a while.
Well, you bought it for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah. But
you guys are so sweet.
I know. But I saw it. I went, I got to have this, right? And it was Frampton Comes Alive.
Classic.
The double live album.
Yeah.
And it was in great shape. The vinyl was in terrific shape. So, yeah.
Have you ever seen a Menudo album?
No. I was looking for one for you for Christmas.
No.
But I couldn't find one.
Yeah, I'd have bought that for you for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Last time I was at a record store, I went to the guy and I said, "Do you have like Menudo's greatest hits?" And he looked at me, he goes, "I don't think that's possible." I said, "Dude, that was sarcasm. Menudo, man.
Menudo." You know, whenever you mention Menudo, I think of the DeFranco family. I don't know why.
Remember love beat?
Heartbeat, it's a love beat.
Yeah.
And when we meet, it's a great sensation.
Please don't sing that. Okay, so I already mentioned one of my favorite bands of all time. This is probably second or third favorite band of all time.
Oh.
Boston.
Oh, come on.
1976.
You know how much I love Boston.
Boston. I love Boston.
Oh, my gosh.
We're a rock and roll band. That's got to be my favorite song from them.
Oh, yeah. They've got More Than a Feeling.
The
whole album, dude.
What a debut album. Look at all the hits on that. Every track is awesome on the Boston debut.
Yeah.
You know? And Tom Scholz was such a perfectionist. How long did it take him to come out with the follow-up? I mean, Epic Records almost dumped him. They were giving him a hard time because he couldn't produce the next album because he wanted it to be as good as the first.
Oh, boy.
Right.
That's the problem with having the bar so high initially.
Oh, for sure.
But they had unique vocals, electronics. I mean, they hit it all.
The voices, man.
Yeah, the voices were
incredible. Right. And you know what? You mentioned before about album artwork.
Yeah.
Like, there's a prime example. Like, it was art back then.
Well, there is a list. There is a list of the best album covers of all time.
You know, with the flying saucer? And
The guitar in the outer space. Yeah. Boston's up there.
I thought so.
It's up there for sure. Great art. Yeah, great stuff. But
anyway, I just had to mention Boston, huge. Love their music.
You know, Scholz recorded that album in his basement studio in his own home. You know that, right?
Their debut album?
The debut album. He tricked the studio. The studio wanted him to do it in a studio. And he actually lied to them. And he actually did it in his basement.
What, trying to save some dough or something?
I don't know.
He liked the sound.
Well, he was an engineer, right?
Yeah.
And
He may have had a better setup than some of the studios.
Probably. Then. Well, obviously, I mean, it sounds perfect. That album is such a good sounding album. Yeah, it's really well produced.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, the other band is in my top three.
I'm going to tell you what it is.
All right, okay.
ELO.
That is absolutely
right. I knew he was going to say that.
Yeah, you know my favorite song from them is?
Living Thing.
That's right.
There it is.
How did you know that?
Because I know you. I know that.
Yeah.
A New World record was released in 76.
Yeah. I was just listening to some of my vinyl today. I was listening to Roll Over Beethoven.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't even get me started.
I've got the 8-minute and 12-second version.
You know what? I
got
to bring it up. So you brought that up on purpose, didn't you?
I did.
There's two beefs I have with that song. One is the concert we went to and we left early.
We missed the encore.
But I'm not going to harp on that, okay? But I bought the Greatest Hits album way back when.
Well, you thought you did.
And it's a great title for Greatest Hits by ELO. It's called Olé, which is ELO backwards, right?
Yeah.
Olé. And on the album, Rock and Roll Over Beethoven.
How long was the song on that album you bought?
Just over 4 freaking minutes.
And we went album hunting. I picked up that Olé album. Same album. How long was that song on my album?
Over 8 minutes.
8 minutes and 12 seconds.
Dude, you got hosed. I got freaking ripped. So they recognized the error. People probably complained. I mean, it's an epic song.
Well, there's a long intro on that version.
Good.
Yeah.
And no, it's part of the song.
Yeah.
And what do? They hack it. For the first Greatest Hits.
So you have a substandard Olé album.
It's in the garbage. I'm going to make a fucking clock out of it. How's that sound?
I'll take it.
Well, we got to go album hunting again. We'll find you a real one.
Oh, man. Yeah, that, well, I think I have all the albums anyway, so I have all the songs from that anyway.
You need the extended version for Roll Over Beethoven.
Oh, for sure.
ELO, the Eagles in Boston, top three.
Oh, look at you.
For the 70s, anyway.
Look at you.
Yep.
That's right. You know, my favorite song is off of that album, believe it or not.
What?
Telephone Line.
Oh, yeah.
Love Telephone Line.
That one's not highly played. You don't usually hear that one on the classic rock radio stations.
It's a great song, though. That's okay. Those are usually the ones I like, the ones that aren't mainstream. That's what I like.
Okay, moving on to 77.
It's my favorite year of all time, by the way.
Ooh.
It is.
I'm excited.
I use that in my passwords. Uh-oh.
Let me guess, that's your PIN for your credit card.
Pretty much.
I was just going to bring up about pre-recorded cassette sales. They finally caught up to vinyl album sales.
They equaled it. Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't that wild, eh?
Pre-recorded.
Yes.
Well, that was huge. I mean, the music industry, they hated audio cassettes.
Well, mixtapes, man.
Mixtapes, because they said it was killing the music industry, the record sales.
Well, look at digital now.
Well, that's like Spotify now. There's always something.
Well, they get royalties off Spotify.
But next to crap.
I mean, that brings up Metallica and Napster battle. Remember that?
Yes.
And when Napster, for all the downloads, crushed them, that's for sure.
I remember sitting over your house one night and people were yelling out songs and I was on the computer on Napster and just playing all these songs that we hadn't heard in years.
Well, that's what you do now with Spotify.
It's awesome.
Right? I mean, anything you want to hear, just go on Spotify.
Or Google. If you got a Spotify account, say, hey, Google, play this. And it plays the song for you.
Yeah, there's tons of that going around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's what audio that's what audio cassettes did back then. And
We had huge. I still have a big case full of mixed tapes in the basement.
Do you?
I don't have a cassette player.
I do. Give them to me.
All right.
You know what? I do not remember buying a pre-recorded cassette. I just stuck with albums and made my own cassettes. I don't remember buying.
I just bought one today.
No, but you know what I mean? Back then, though?
I did.
You didn't. You didn't buy a lot either.
I think I bought a couple.
No. But it was always records.
I made my own.
Yeah.
I remember one I bought, The Best of Loggins and Messina. I had a pre-recorded.
I just bought the album.
Did you?
I showed you the picture. I just showed you the
album. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's the one of the pre-recorded cassettes I had. Best of Loggins. Mama Don't Dance.
Yeah. And Your Daddy Don't Rock and Roll.
That's it.
You know what? Just sparked a memory.
Hmm.
I did buy one cassette. It was the storybook, Jungle Book.
Bare Necessities?
The cassette was red. God, I remember that now.
There's some great songs off that.
Darn right there is.
Count?
I like King Louis' song.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm making it count. That was one cassette, pre-recorded cassette I bought, The Jungle Book.
I love
Should
that
I
music.
Be embarrassed?
Yes.
Well, I'm not.
No. I like that music. Yeah, Baloo and King Louis, and this was all good stuff.
Although I was only 10, so.
What was the name of the snake?
Ka.
Yeah, that's correct. Ka.
Yeah.
Ka.
See? Trying to catch me on some trivia, no? Big guy.
That's all right. You know, one of the faults in an audio cassette, though, was the speed, the pitch. Because there was no way to adjust it. You know, you got turntables now. You can adjust the pitch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was actually called wow and flutter.
There you go.
Okay, which affected the wow and flutter, actually. Right?
No, the wow is and flutter are the fluctuations in speed. That's how they measured it. They called it a wow and flutter.
It's not the pitch?
Sure, it could be a pitch.
You pitch. So anyway, because it was preset at the factory when they shipped there's no way to adjust it.
On the cassettes?
On the audio cassettes. Yeah, there's no way to adjust the speed, right?
Right.
Or the wow and flutter.
Actually, on the Nakamichi, you could adjust.
Is that the guy that was the Nakatomi Plaza?
Well, that's Nakatomi, he said that last time. No, Nakamichi is a very high-end cassette.
Come out to the coast. We get together.
We'll have a few laughs. Anyways.
You bastard.
Yeah, Nakamichi. I'm sure there was a very high-end deck, and you could change the speed. Yeah.
Do you have a Nakamichi?
That's a personal question.
there's salve for that, you know. There's a cream you can get for that.
Yeah. But no, I've never. I couldn't afford a Nakamichi. They were like $2,000-$3,000 cassette decks back then. It was brutal.
Yeah.
But they were nice decks.
Well, you know what? I'm back into audio cassettes again. I got both vinyl audio cassettes. I got 8-track. I got them all.
Well, I got a bunch downstairs. Maybe I'll look at it. Maybe you can record off those, right?
Yeah.
And we'll take a look at those later.
Yeah.
Anyway, 1977, moving on.
Yeah.
Huge, huge thing happened in 1977.
Well, there's a lot of huge things happened in 77.
August 16th, 1977. What happened?
The king is dead, baby.
The king is dead. Elvis Presley died. I remember when that happened.
Yeah. I do too.
Yeah. I told you. Remember the story I told you about it when I was working at the theater? I was working at a movie theater, and they had pictures along the top. Yeah. All the celebrities. It was just ready to open. It was a brand new theater.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was August 18th was the grand opening for that theater.
They had Chaplin up there. They had, I remember
that. We came in on the 17th to prepare, and one of the pictures had fallen off. Guess who it was? Elvis Presley.
Shut up.
I'm not kidding. True story.
Really?
The only picture that fell off of the whole of it was Elvis Presley had fallen down the day after he died. That's bizarre.
Dude, you're making
that's a true story.
Damn, I'm getting chills.
Yeah, true story.
Huh.
I could bring up another science story, but you guys would get pissed off at me, so I won't even talk about I won't even talk about quantum entanglement.
Here we go.
Wow.
Okay, if anybody wants to go for a smoke or go for coffee. Now's your chance. We'll be back in a few minutes. Okay, what are we talking about?
Everything in the universe is connected some way or another.
That's another podcast.
Yeah,
stop them now, please.
Yeah, we can do that on Weird and Wacky.
Hey, I remember when Elvis died. I was a kid then. Like, I remember playing outside, and my buddy's mom pulled into the driveway of her house, opened the door, came out. She was just bawling, screaming. Like, she just, I don't know. She was just freaking out and ran in the house. And my buddy and I look at each other like, what the heck? My buddy went in and came back out. Oh, Elvis died.
Wow. What,
really? That's why she was freaking.
You were like, you were 10.
Yeah.
Kidding.
And you said, well, I didn't like him anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Elvis who?
Elvis who?
Elvis who?
No.
Yeah,
no. Yeah, she's lost it.
So he died on the toilet, didn't he?
Well, they found him in the bathroom.
Like, hunched over.
With rigor mortis had set in, yeah.
Yeah, hunched what? Over. Sitting on the toilet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a sad day. That's for sure.
You know there's a lot of people that die in the can? Do you know that? That's a common thing. A heart attack, because you're straining sometimes, and it would trigger like a stroke. Oh, just
don't strain.
Fiber, man. Fiber.
Why do all the conversations with Cha always end up with poop schedules?
No, I know. Dude, I'm just saying. That's a frick. Just be careful how much you're pushing out.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
All right. Okay. Well, since we're talking about death, let's get it over with. Who else died in 1977?
Well, one of my favorites, Mark Bolan.
Yeah, T-Rex.
From T-Rex, yeah.
Yeah.
Gloria Jones was driving the car that he died in. That's tragic. Well, Gloria Jones was one of the backup singers in T-Rex. And they were at a party, and Mark Bolan had never learned to drive. He didn't want to drive, only because he was scared that he would die driving a car.
Well, that's a
not kidding.
Sad story.
Yeah.
And that's kind of odd, isn't it?
Very odd.
So let's entrust your life with someone else.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, she suffered injuries in the accident. Mark Bolan died instantly when she lost control of the car. And there's more on Gloria Jones. We could talk about her later, but yeah.
Yeah, like it hit a fence, then it hit a tree.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like what? 2 weeks or something before his 30th birthday, he was 29.
He was 29 years old. Yeah, yeah. It's very sad. Yeah, yeah. I like Mark Bolan. I love that album, Electric Warrior. It's a very good album by T-Rex.
Okay, since we're on sad notes, something else.
Wow, this is really tragic.
The big one.
Leonard Skinner.
Oh, the
plane
whole
crash.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That was. That's a pointless, stupid incident.
Yeah, they're a great band. I mean, how many guys did they lose?
Well, they lost, what, Gaines?
Two direct band members,
Van Zant, Cassie Gaines, Steve Gaines, Ronnie Van Zant, Steve Gaines just joined the band, by the way.
Wow.
Because they had just released Street Survivors, like just a week prior. And he was the new guitarist on the Street Survivors album.
Well, and his older sister, Cassie Gaines.
Cassie Gaines, yeah. She died as well.
She was just, yeah.
The assistant road manager, Dean Kilpatrick, pilot Walter McCreary, co-pilot William Gray, all killed.
So two band members.
Cassie Gaines was a
vocalist.
He's
a backup singer.
She was a vocalist singer.
Yeah,
so, but the two, Steve Gaines and Ronnie Van Zant and the backup singer. Terrible, terrible accident. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah.
October 20th, 1977.
Jeez. All right, so that's 77 is kind of a downer.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, so let's move on to 78.
Yeah, we can go on there.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, there is an album that was released in 1977.
But it didn't really hit its stride till 78.
That's right.
And we already talked about it briefly.
Saturday Night Fever.
Big
oh
hit.
Oh, my gosh. Come on. How many singles went number one? How many songs off that album went number one?
A whole bunch of them.
Seven. Come on, man.
Well, I mean, it catapulted the Bee Gees, too. I mean, they were on their way up, and this thing just catapulted them.
It's a double album. The Bee Gees performed on six of the tracks. They were supposed to do seven, but they let Yvonne Elliman actually did it. If I Can't Have You, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yvonne Elliman, she did a great job on that. But the Bee Gees song was supposed to be included, their version on that, but it was cut.
You know, that movie, is kind of messed
up. It's dark.
It is. It is dark.
When you think of the music,
when's the last time you've seen it?
Oh yeah, I've.
Well,
just,
the way
I
they treat the way they treat some of the girls in the movie.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's nasty.
Yeah, it's really a dark movie. It's not a feel good movie.
No,
by
it's not.
Means.
Like when you think of the music, yo, it's all happy. Everybody loves it. Then okay, let's watch the movie.
Yeah.
Like wow, what a down.
Yeah, well, Travolta did another dark movie after that too, like Urban Cowboy. That was pretty dark,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Another good soundtrack. I just bought that on vinyl, by the way.
Urban Cowboy.
Urban Cowboy soundtrack, yeah.
Stand By Me is on that one.
It is, by Benny King. Yeah.
Benny King. Well, Benny King did the original.
The original.
But it was sung by who?
On the album?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll have to look that up. It wasn't Benny King.
Wasn't it?
No.
Okay, no. Check our show notes. We'll get you that info.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah. Everybody's probably screaming at the podcast right now. It's this person.
Yeah.
It's where are you guys?
People listening to this shit?
I hope so. I hope so. But yeah, Saturday Night Fever, great, successful album. You know, it's the second best-selling soundtrack of all time next to what? Next to what? What's the number one?
Not the Jungle Book?
It's not the Jungle Book on audio cassette. No.
I don't know.
The Bodyguard.
Really?
Yeah, The Bodyguard, Whitney Houston. Yeah,
I guess I could see that.
That's the best. Wow, you're just for her song alone.
Yeah.
There's the power of one song, really, when you think about it.
Yeah. Or right? Even, the, you know what? Even the Titanic, I bet. I wonder how that soundtrack did.
I don't know.
Well,
either. Because of that one song?
Yeah, that's what I mean. When you think of one song, it was a
My Heart
song.
Will Go On.
Whatever it was called.
Yeah, My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. But yeah, but anyway, Saturday Night Fever. Yeah, we're going to give that a shout out. 1978. What else? What
something
else happened?
Something else pretty big. Keith Moon.
Oh, he died, yeah.
Yeah.
78. Not a death, eh? Yeah. Not a death.
I just remembered who sang Stand By Me.
Who?
Mickey Gilley.
After you looked it up.
Well, I've got to find out something.
Oh, you called him up. Well, he went silent. Yeah, we're happy to know it. He went in the other room. He's on the Mac. Yeah, what's going on?
Hey, well, I can't leave the listeners hanging.
You no, that's right. Mickey Gilley.
Mickey
right.
Gilley.
You're right.
Okay, we're on to Keith Moon now. He died.
Okay.
Yeah.
Prescription drugs, actually.
You know what? And, you know, he had a big problem with alcohol and whatnot, but that's really not what... He was on medication, weaning him off of the alcohol, right?
Do you think he took too much of it?
You think?
Queeks, you think he might have had dyslexia?
You bastard. Yeah, he had dyslexia. Yeah, that's it. You bet. I had to bring it up, huh?
Well, no, that's in our blooper reel. You have to listen to the blooper reel to find out what that means.
And you notice who's not in our blooper reel?
Well, because he keeps pausing.
Exactly.
You know, the magic of editing, right?
Yeah.
Like, just for the record, Oates says a lot of dumbass stuff, okay?
Yeah.
Just saying.
Prove it.
I know.
Yeah, but he's the one that has his finger on the mouse click. Oh, we got to take that out.
Oh, we got to take that out. I sound stupid.
I can always count on you guys to, you know, pump up an ego.
Oh, sorry, buddy.
All right.
Sorry.
All right, so what do you want to talk about now? Let's change the subject.
Yeah, what about Drugs in My Pocket? Well, that was actually 1979.
Well, that's, hold on. Those are the Monks.
That's right.
I remember that album.
Drugs in My Pocket, and I don't know what to do with them.
Yeah, I don't think people want us to sing, or at least try to sing.
Well, I thought you were supposed to sing.
Well, probably be better.
He's throwing down the challenge. Go ahead then.
I'm not singing.
All right. Thank God
That's
for that.
Correct. That's right. What I was going to say when you attempted it. You're not singing. I don't know what that is.
Oh my gosh.
So just before we get into 1979, Queeks, you wanted to mention something about Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Springsteen that I was going to bring up my favorite album, which is this one, Darkness on the Edge of Town, released in June 78.
A lot of great songs on that album.
Just loaded. I mean... A lot of the songs off the album became staples for his live performances, like Badlands, Prove It All Night, Racing in the Street. There's tons.
I remember it was really difficult to get tickets for those concerts. Oh, really difficult.
Bruce was the only guy that I slept overnight in line for a concert. I did that, not for this tour, the Darkness tour, but for the River tour. I slept in a sleeping bag in line in Toronto to get...
Where did he play? Exhibition Stadium?
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, outdoor, yeah.
Yeah, and I overnight in a sleeping bag. It just made it that much better. You know, when you dedicate that much time to getting tickets.
Well, no, I remember you had to do that to get a ticket.
Oh, for sure.
It was before all, like now we have the bots that buy them all up. All you had to do was wait in line and you get a ticket.
Oh, for sure. Critics praised the maturity of the album's themes and the lyrics. It was different from that on Born to Run. And in 2020, Rolling Stone magazine listed the top 500 greatest albums of all time, and it hit number 91.
Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Yep. You know what? There's a tragic event. I hate to bring up another death, but this guy died, and it was tragic the way that he died. Big fan of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry Kath, a founding member, accidentally shot himself at a party in 1978.
Shot himself?
Yeah, he had a pistol. They were partying, and he had a pistol, and he took the magazine out of the gun. He said, don't worry, it's not loaded.
But there was one left in the chamber.
There was one in the chamber, and he shot himself right in front of everybody. Yeah, terrible, terrible.
So there's a lesson. Don't play with guns, okay?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, guns are bad, okay? So don't play with guns, okay?
No, maybe you don't play with guns. I mean, they're just stupid.
Yeah, I don't even know what he's doing with a loaded weapon at a party anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, it's crazy. But sorry. Terry Kath.
You were going to say, God bless America, is what you were going to say.
Here's a little
My gosh, I was not.
Here's a little fun fact for you.
Right.
When Chicago was first starting out, they were started in the late 60s, Jimi Hendrix saw Terry Kath play with Chicago on one of their early shows in concert. And Jimi Hendrix made a point to say to the band, the Chicago band, he said, I wish... And I can only hope to play as good as that guy right there, Terry Kath.
Ooh, what a compliment.
No kidding. That's how good he thought Terry Kath was. This is Jimi Hendrix. That's a compliment, right?
No kidding.
Yeah.
And he shot himself.
And he's dead now. Yeah.
Don't worry. It's not loaded.
Boom.
Wow. Imagine witnessing that. That'd be horrible.
It's horrible. It's horrible. But why? Yeah. Why am I struggling not to giggle?
For what? When he shot himself?
Well, just what a stupid way to go.
I know.
Oh, man, I can't even imagine being there and seeing that. That's horrific.
Hey, let's talk about Ted Nugent carving his autograph into a fan's arm with a bow knife.
Uncle Ted.
Are you serious?
You serious, Clark? Yeah, he did, actually. Yeah.
Was the participant, like, willing?
It's called a Bowie knife, I guess, right?
A Bowie knife.
A Bowie knife. Yeah, it was in Philadelphia in January of 70, what year are we on, 78?
Was that during a concert or?
Yeah, after a show. The fan wanted Nugent's autograph in their arm with a knife. So he did it.
Uncle Ted.
Yeah. What about Van Halen?
Debut album, 1978.
Yeah, February.
Yeah, that's another milestone right there.
That's a great album.
Yeah.
That was a heavy party album. Back then.
Well, that's when they brought in David Lee Roth as the front guy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they weren't happy with him. He started taking over too much of the attention, and the band was kind of upset with Dave.
I don't think Dave and Eddie really saw eye to eye.
No.
And I think, Dave, man, of course Dave's going to have the spotlight. He's your front man. He's your singer. Of course he is. Like, and then it's hard.
That's what happens.
And it's hard because Eddie, he's a legendary guitarist, so he's going to want some spotlight too. And I think that's just where it went wrong. But why can't they just have two spotlights for crying out loud?
Yeah.
You know, totally stupid. Because I love Dave. That's Van Halen.
Yeah.
Not Sammy Hagar.
I love Sammy. Don't put Sammy down.
No, I'm not putting Sammy down. I'm saying I prefer.
I'm with you, Chuck.
Van Halen is with Dave, Dave. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's what everybody's
just a gigolo.
With.
Dave's great. I even bought some Dave CDs.
Pretty Woman. I love their cover, Pretty Woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of overplayed and lame. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, it's classic. I mean, you know, I agree with you that I think of David Lee Roth as
that's
the
off
guy.
Of what? Diver Down, Pretty Woman.
Yeah. And then I got the Dave CD, the Skyscraper.
Yeah.
That was actually a pretty big album for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Hey, moving on.
So we talked about the Bee Gees already, but in 1978, Barry Gibb became the only songwriter in history to have four consecutive number one singles on Billboard's Hot 100 at the same time.
That's insane.
Yeah, and it's crazy.
Now, are we talking about Saturday Night Fever singles?
Yeah, we're talking about him as a songwriter and a performer. The first one in the number one spot was Stayin' Alive with the Bee Gees. The next one was Love is Thicker Than Water, which was performed by Andy Gibb, but written by Barry. Then that was followed by Night Fever into the number one spot by the Bee Gees. And the last one, the fourth one, was If I Can't Have You by Yvonne Elliman, which was written by Barry Gibb. But yeah, he did songs for a bunch of people. And
you know, here's another song. Here's this by Samantha Sang. It's called Emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And all you hear in that song are the Bee Gees, right? That's all you hear because they're backing vocals.
Yeah,
and that's all you hear. You think it's a Bee Gees song. Matter of fact, that song was supposed to be included on the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, but it was one of the ones that were cut. It ended up being in there. But yeah.
Well, that's something I would do as well. If I were to make a record, I'd get somebody like the Bee Gees and sing and just mouth my words, just pretend I'm singing, let them sing and make some dough. Okay. 78. Are we done with 78 or somebody going to something else? Something?
Wow. There's so many things. I mean, we got to keep this show to a reasonable length. We
can 79.
Keep talking and talking.
All right, let's go to 79.
You want to jump to 79, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Great. The Sony Walkman, introduced in Japan.
You can actually walk around and listen to music.
It's amazing.
It was amazing at the time.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah, you can go for a run. You can be on the subway. You can listen to music.
Because before that, it was radio. You have to listen to the radio.
Right.
But now you can make your own tape, mix, walk around.
Yeah, exactly.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
And now, because why is that such a big deal? Listen to it now. You got 1,000 songs on, little...
Yeah, people know they wouldn't appreciate
something. How much
like that.
Was a Sony Walkman back in the day?
Yeah, it wasn't cheap.
That's what I'm just wondering. Like, what's
and they weren't
question.
Small. I had to fit a cassette tape. There was the size of a small book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember my first Walkman when I bought it. I specifically put up the tent in the backyard, my buddy and I, and we slept over in the backyard in the tent just because we could listen to music outside.
Yeah.
Like, that's how weird it was.
Yeah, your own music, not radio. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was a mixtape. That's right.
That's
cool. Yeah, but I think, only some people can appreciate that, listen to the podcast right now. But it was a huge deal.
Okay, so I just Googled it because I didn't know how. I can't remember how much I paid for it. But they say it went for about $150.
Yeah, 1978, that was a lot of money.
And you had one? What the hell were you selling?
He had a lot of stuff. Remember, he would
buy and sell.
Yeah, we wanted something. We waited for Cha to buy it because we knew 2 weeks later we could buy it off of him for half the price.
For sure. He was the king of buy and sell.
Well, I bought my first Betamax off of him.
Did you really?
Yeah, he bought Sony. One. Yeah, Sony Betamax. He bought one. 2 weeks later, he's, I'm going to sell it. Okay, I'll buy it for you for half the price. Thank you very much. I just wait for him to buy
it. It's called a bad investment.
Whatever. You were awesome.
I know.
Oh, man.
Walkman was great.
People would say, what the hell's a Betamax?
That's right. Oh, and then when the Betamax, then I sold a Betamax to get a Beta Hi-Fi. And then back then, again, I spent about $1,600 on this Hi-Fi VHS. Or no, sorry, VHS. Beta.
Well, for people who don't know, they were, tapes.
You can explain what a beta is.
Well, what is our listening age?
I don't know. Well, people don't know what a beta is. Some people don't even know what a VHS is.
I'll give them that. Yeah, that's true.
All right. What is it?
It
was a smaller version of a VHS. It was like an 8-track thing that you put into a machine that played video.
Okay, that was a horrible explanation. Holy crap.
Well, people don't even know what 8-track is. They don't know what beta is, VHS, or 8-track. So we're done.
Look it up.
Yeah, look it up.
It looks like a small shoebox.
Check our show notes.
That's much better.
Check our show notes.
we'll put a link to
the Smithsonian.
Exactly. Oh my God, how old are we?
Wow.
That's nasty.
Hey, listen, I still have some movies on beta.
Do you have a beta machine?
I have a beta machine.
Oh, come on.
It doesn't work, but I have one.
Well, it doesn't work, but you have the tapes just in case.
If anybody wants to know what one looks like, there it is. 1979. So you know some change in the subject?
I do.
1979 was a big year for disco. We brought disco up back in 75. Mm-hmm. But guess what? 79 had a lot of number one hits from that genre of music. And let's give you a few from bands like Bee Gees, Donna Summer, Rod Stewart, Blondie, tons of people that were really successful with that.
What are the names? Oh, Heart of Glass?
Heart of Glass.
From Blondie.
Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart.
Rod Stewart, yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know the other ones. Look it up. Look it up. Take my word for it. It was a big year for disco.
All right.
Okay, what else? We're into 79 still. What about the Who concert?
Oh, the tragedy in Cincinnati, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was that general admission concert. We had talked about that in a previous podcast, but yeah, there it is, 1979, the Who tragedy.
Who would ever think?
11 people, right?
Who would ever think general admission would be a good idea at any year?
Well, you know what? It's not general admission that was the problem. It was the general admission along with keeping everybody waiting until they're ready to open up the doors. Then you got it's chaos. But if you had the doors opened like hours before the show is going to start and it's general admission.
Well, that's true.
Then in they come gradually filling up the best seats. I get it. But if they created that massive hysteria when they opened up those doors and everybody wanted the best seat out of thousands of people.
Well, not only that, they only opened up two doors.
Two doors. Okay, come on in now. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah.
11 people got trampled to death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, that was tragic. And they featured that on that WKRP in Cincinnati episode, remember?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That was a very downer of an KRP episode.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a downer, yeah.
So another guy in the 70s that we haven't talked about, Barry Manilow.
My wife loves Barry Manilow.
Yeah. I write the songs.
You know what? How successful that guy was.
Huge
Look
success.
Look at all the hits he's had.
What do you think of when you think of Barry Manilow?
The face.
That's right.
He had an album.
I think of his nose.
Oat and I are walking through a mall. I can't remember what mall it was. It doesn't matter. Yeah. We're walking through a mall and we're ready to pass a Records on Wheels.
Yeah.
That was the name of this. And as we're walking by the Records on Wheels, they get the featured albums on a stand, a bunch of them.
Like about 40 of them.
40 of them. And it's Barry Manilow's face on the album. Oat and I just at the same time look, as we're passing by, look at the albums, and we just grabbed each other in fear. Like it was just overpowering. Freaking Barry Manilow's face.
Well, it was like a big wall of Barry Manilow's face, a whole bunch of albums. It was the scary face
incident. Yeah.
Yeah, scary. But he had
okay,
a ton.
He's got that going for him.
Oh, listen, he's super talented. You know, do I love all his stuff? No, not really. But you can't deny all the hits that he's had.
Now, I'm gonna mention something, but I don't know the year. I'm going to see if one of you guys know it or not.
Okay.
Whenever I think of Barry Manilow, the same category is Neil Diamond.
Love Neil Diamond.
Oh. Yeah, exactly.
One of the most successful performers of all time.
Yeah,
as far
I believe
as songwriting
it.
And yeah.
Now was that the 70s? I'm asking you because I'm not sure.
70s for sure. He was 70s.
Yeah, okay. Neil Diamond's awesome.
He's huge.
Yeah, I mean Neil's been around for a long time.
Yeah,
you know, and a good call out because Neil Diamond should definitely be mentioned. He's fantastic. Yeah.
Okay, so you know we could go on talking all night about the 70s. There's lots in there.
I'd love to.
Yeah, but I think we should wrap it up there, and that's. Memorable Moments of the 1970s Part 2, 1975 to 79, with Oat,
Queets,
and Cha,
the Jabber Guys. Remember to go to our website, jabberguys.com, to subscribe to our podcast, Inside Rock and Weird and Wacky World.